What is up? It is the Q Man. How the hell is everybody today? You having a good day? Good. Great. Grand. I am getting a visit from the podcasting gods today because the way that I do my booking for this podcast is what's known as last minute and lazy, meaning generally... Generally, I'll email somebody like 5 minutes before I think, it'd be a good idea to talk to this person today and just say, hey, what are you doing for the next hour? And almost always they say nothing. I'm sorry, not nothing. That's me. I'm the person doing nothing. Almost always they say, I have family stuff. I have work. I have this. I have that. Can we schedule something for 2, 3, 4 weeks out? And I'm like, no. You know why? Because I don't have a calendar that I use, and I still... In the year 2024, I never got used to the fucking calendar on the phone. I use that shit almost never, you know? And, you know, I've been in relationships and stuff where the girl's like, oh, can I import my calendar into your calendar? And like, you know, I don't do that shit. When I have things scheduled, I write them down on tiny sheets of paper that I leave on my desk. And one of those sheets of paper was to do a podcast today, but my guest canceled. So... the sheets of paper work because I was on time and I was scheduled. But unfortunately, my guest, who will be on, I'm sure, at some point in the future, had to reschedule. And so I don't know what the point of all that is, but this is the QTR podcast and it's just me today. It might be for the better because I got a lot of shit on my mind anyways. First and foremost, this podcast brought to you by my long-term sponsors and supporters, the loves of my bullion life over at JM Bullion. The only place I buy my gold and silver bullion exclusively. I love JM Bullion. They've been in business for nearly a decade. They've done over $7 billion in sales. JM Bullion has their own rep for QTR podcast listeners, the wonderful Laura. You can email her, Laura at jmbullion.com. If you've never bought gold, you never bought silver before, you want a personalized touch, you don't feel like going on the website, shoot Laura a message and say what's up. And she'll help you with whatever you need. But JM Bullion has manageable premiums. They have great inventory. I love that they constantly have things in stock, even when the physical markets are under pressure, probably like they are right now, with gold approaching 2,200. And, of course, we'll talk about that. But I love JM Bullion. Their link is also in the podcast description. Email Laura. Tell her the Q Man sent you. They ship discreetly. They turn the orders around very quickly. I love JM Bullion. This podcast also brought to you by my brother, Sang Lucci. Speaking of podcast cancellations, Sang Lucci was supposed to be on with me last week. And actually, we had a 6 a.m. podcast scheduled last week. Here's a Sang Lucci story for you. We had, as I'm trying to find the goddamn script that he wants me to read now, because he's doing the master class again, which is awesome. And Charlie's got a thing he wants me to read, but I can't figure out what the hell I did with it. Oh, you guys are so patient with me. I love you. Here it is. All right, let me tell you my story first. Lucci was supposed to be on the podcast last week. We had a 6 a.m. appointment to do an hour-long chat on a weekday. I don't know. It was like a Wednesday or something. And he texts me at like 4 in the morning. And he's like, yo, can we do 5 a.m. instead? And I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm like, all right, I'm cleaning the shit out of my eyes. I'm waking up. And then we get close to 5 a.m. and he cancels. He's like, I can't do it today. Ever since I got back from Colombia, my time schedule's been out of whack. To which I replied, I think you are likely still under the influence of that Colombian booger sugar. Because I don't know what you're doing up at fucking 3 in the morning. I'm the only psycho that gets up that early at 4 a.m. And, you know, if you're doing that, you're either like I am, which is trying to stay relatively sober, or you're like he is. Maybe he's been, I don't know if that's the case. I can't, you know, Sang Lucci, I'm not confirming that that's what happened. I'm just saying it happens to be a coincidence that he just got back from Colombia and is staying up all night. Maybe it means nothing at all. There you go. My friend Sang Lucci. I said, what are you doing? You up trading fucking Bitcoin all night in Puerto Rico? God, I'm sure he's got a great life. He parties in Puerto Rico, folks. him and Peter Schiff and Harris Kupperman and all these guys that I know, they're all in fucking Puerto Rico, all hanging out together. But you know what? I like Philadelphia because yesterday I tried to get on the subway and a guy was screaming obscenities and spitting. So there you go. It's like Puerto Rico. If homeless people were the ocean, I'd be surrounded by water. Lucci is doing the master course, and he will be on the damn podcast at some point. I'm doing an in-person thing with Lucci at some point this summer. He wants to do a Lucci Meets in Philadelphia, which is this little powwow where he gets together with the people that follow his live stream. And so I said, all right, cool, let's do something in Philly. So we're going to set a date for that this summer, and we're going to hang out and do like a live podcast one night in Philadelphia. I'll let you guys know when that is. You can come by and hang out. Lucci's like, how do you want to get it set up? I said, I don't know. Let's just make sure we have an open bar, and I'll pick the venue based on that. Lucci is doing his master course again on March 25th. That is in like less than 3 weeks. The master course is like becoming legendary. I've talked to people that have done it. If you're just getting started in options trading, it's one of the most comprehensive, in-depth, badass trading education programs that you can find, especially when it comes to options and futures. And then, of course, trading psychology and tape reading. These are the things that I harp about that Lucci's great at. And this is why I love the Steam Room, too. All the links to that are in the podcast description. If you go to sanglucci.com/MC for Master Course, he's going to give you a discount or something. Doesn't say that here, but you find Lucci and you tell them, find Sang or find Charlie Bathgate, because Charlie's got his shit together. Lucci doesn't. Charlie's like his assistant, I think. He's the guy that's always trying to get to book me with him. You know, if Lucci wants to come on, Charlie will email me. So find Charlie Bathgate, because he's got his shit together. As a matter of fact, I'll give you his charlie@sanglucci.com. Email Charlie Bathgate and tell him that you heard on the QTR podcast that the master course is on the 25th and you want to do it and you want a discount. And you will come if he gives you a discount, or you will come not at all. Say that. Oh, 10 minutes in. Still fucking around. That's all right, though, because when I don't have a guest, I can just ramble as much as I want. This podcast also brought to you by my friend George Gammon over at Rebel Capitalist Pro. That link is in the podcast description. Rebel Capitalist Pro, an awesome forum with great content from people like Lynn Alden, Chris McIntosh, Brent Johnson, George Gammon, explaining how to preserve your wealth in a world of out-of-control central banks. I love Rebel Capitalist Pro, and George's two YouTube channels, George Gammon and Rebel Capitalist, are both free. They do live question and answer sessions all the time. Lucci also does a free YouTube in the morning at 7:30. He does a pregame show that I fucking love watching. Go to his thing. It's Sang Lucci on YouTube. Tell them all that I sent you so that they will continue to shower me in the minuscule checks that they provide to me on a monthly basis, which help me eat one grain of rice for dinner. But I do love Rebel Capitalist Pro, and I love Lynn Alden, who is, her premium research is accessible through Rebel Capitalist Pro. So you sign up, you get all of Lynn Alden's shit for free. And Lynn Alden, also one of the names associated with Swan, which is my latest sponsor and my only Bitcoin-related sponsor. If you want my reasoning as to why I let Swan on, you can listen to my last podcast. I did my due diligence. I like the guys at Swan. It's an easy-to-use app that helps you stack Bitcoin on a recurring basis. It's a no-frills, no-bullshit app. There's people involved with Swan, like Lynn Alden, like Larry Lepard, that I trust. I've talked to the people there, and the app is just super easy to use. So if you're looking to start stacking Bitcoin, you could check out the Swan app. That link is in my podcast description. You get $10 in free Bitcoin if you use my link that's in my podcast description. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. It's like SwanBitcoin/QTR or something, but the link's in the podcast description. So click on that. Set up a wallet with them. Get your first $10 free. And there you have it. 9 minutes in, and I've said nothing at all. Nothing at all. Nothing at all. I actually do have a lot of shit I want to talk about today. So let's cover it. All right. All right, I'll start. Fuck. There we go. Ugh. So Sorry, I'm icing my foot while I'm doing this. I have tendonitis. Okay. I know that the ice bag keeps falling off. Hang on. I know you guys care about this. Time is just passing and passing and passing, and we're 1 minute closer to me being able to say, hey, I did an hour today. I feel good. It's like when I get on the exercise bike in the morning and I do the first 15 minutes at 0% resistance. You know, you breathe on the pedals and they turn around 1,500 rotations. Like, well, it's a pretty good workout so far today. Let's start with the State of the Union last night. I don't know what kind of drugs they're giving Biden, but whatever they are, sure as hell worked last night. I'm going to say the unpopular part out loud, which was I think he did a damn good job, all things considered. For the last 6 months, I mean, I'm not talking about the content, of course. He was mostly lying. Lying, screaming, you know, things like that. Slurring his words still. But in terms of just raw energy level, reminds me of that t-shirt. You ever see a t-shirt that says, coffee, do stupid things faster with more energy? That's what he was doing. He was doing dumb shit, but faster with more energy. I have to admit, I liked the pace that he was moving at last night. If there's one difference that I noticed between this State of the Union and past ones, is that he was breezing through the content. And so every time people stood up to clap, he was already on to the next sentence. And that, no, that is a nonpartisan thing to love about the State of the Union. Just move the fucking thing along a little bit quicker. I mean, it took him forever to get out there, right? Signing autographs, like he's Taylor Swift going out on stage, giving high fives, taking selfies. It really is a lot of pomp and circumstance. But once he got up to the lectern, and they mentioned last night, the Speaker of the House is supposed to do his, you know, thing where he puts on the Paul Revere hat and he rings the bell and he introduces them or whatever they're supposed to do dating back to the 1800s. Biden just skipped that. He just, you know, he got up to the lectern and he was like, hey, I got a lot of shit to talk about and let's get going. And that's something about that I appreciate. So I appreciated his brevity and his pace. He was moving at a nice pace. Unfortunately, it was akin to the gates opening at Churchill Downs and one horse running backwards. I mean, doing it very quickly, but he was running in the wrong direction for certain. But I will say off the top that whatever drug cocktail they gave him last night must have been Adderall or something. He had to be on something last night. And I remember this about the last debates, too, that he did with Trump. Expectations were so low because when you see him in his normal element, he's stumbling and bumbling and he can't put a sentence together and he can't remember names and he can't remember geographic locations and he makes gaffes and he falls over. And so the bar was set very low. But he must have, my guess would be he slept all day. Okay, he probably read the fucking thing over like 100 times in the last month. And then he slept all day. And then they woke him up like 30 minutes or an hour before he was set to leave the White House. Got him dressed, gave him a pill, got him on some kind of amphetamines, and sent him out there to do the speech. And told him, take the anger and the energy levels to 125%. It's like overclocking a processor. You ever do that? I remember we used to do that back with the old Motorola 68030s. They were like 33 megahertz, but if you overclocked them, you could get them to like 40 megahertz. Of course, it would then promptly explode and your machine would catch fire. But what you're doing is you're sacrificing. I mean, he's probably going to nap for 6 days now straight. You guys have all been on coke benders, right? Actually, I never have. But I'm just saying, you probably have. Maybe Lucci. Maybe I'm not saying Sang Lucci has ever been on a coke bender. But I am saying he just got back from Colombia, so maybe he could tell us about this. You know, when you're sacrificing your long-term health for a very short-term quick burst in productivity, And that was the vibe I got from Biden. He probably walked out of that Hall of Congress last night and crashed so hard. He's probably still sleeping. Probably fell asleep. He'll probably come to like next Wednesday. They'll wake him up. But for the time being, you got to give it to him. Hey, we've all done it too. We've all stayed up late partying and then realized at 6:30 a.m. that we have a final at 7:30 a.m. on pick a subject, you know, the Industrial Revolution. Oh, great. It occurred to you that you never bought the book for the course that started 3 months ago, and so that might make it difficult to complete the final, not to mention the fact that you're going on 36 hours without sleep. So you think to yourself, is there a way that I can learn everything about the Industrial Revolution and get myself the mile and a half to campus in the next 42 minutes and still get a C+ on this test somehow? That requires some very, very deep thinking. Men in lab coats with pills and petri dishes. And remember when Denzel Washington has to go testify in front of Congress or in front of the NTSB in that movie Flight, I think it's called, where, you know, he's an alcoholic and he's a coke addict and goes on a bender and they wake him up and they're like, hey, you know, you gotta get your shit together here for just an hour. And John Goodman, the drug dealer, shows up and he's like, all right, what I'm gonna need you to do is take like five lines here, chase that down with a half bottle of Smirnoff, eat a couple of mushrooms, do 15 jumping jacks, wash your face with cold water. I'm going to smack you across the head six times, do one more line, another shot of whiskey, and you'll be back to zero. You'll be back to baseline, where most people are when they wake up in the morning. That's probably what they had to do with Biden last night. And so, to hand it to him, though, he came out with a lot of energy. I mean, look, better for him to come out and scream and shriek and pant and freak out and be partisan and have some energy. Better for him to do that than to come out and mumble and, you know, with potato chip crumbs on his jacket, looking around. He knew how to get up there. He didn't have any trouble finding the stairs last night. How many times do you think they ran through that on the dress rehearsal? Sir, this is how you're going to walk up to the podium. And when you're done, do not turn around and ask somebody which way you're going. Walk back down the stairs from which you came and back out of the halls of whatever that room is. But the dress rehearsals and the drugs worked because he came out. And to be honest with you, I mean, most people are saying, oh, I see a lot of people on the right whose job it is to make everything that everybody on the left does to be the worst thing that's ever happened. And I was seeing it already. And honestly, I sat through the first 20 or 30 minutes of that State of the Union thinking, hey, sounds good. He sounds like he's got his shit together. This is the best I've seen him in a year, at least. Or probably since that last debate that he did with Trump, where he showed up probably on the same drug cocktail. But I was kind of impressed. I was like, all right. They have managed to reanimate his corpse here for at least an hour using some special combination of space-age technology that is not available to most of us yet. And I actually thought he did good. As far as being partisan, I don't really give a shit. I mean, look, we know what his policies are. And so that wasn't a big surprise that he came out and asked for aid to Ukraine. It wasn't big surprise that he came out and asked for more money and lied about a bunch of other stuff. That wasn't really a surprise. He's been doing that for 3 years. I actually think the State of the Union could work to the advantage of the Republicans because it could give his base enough confidence to say, hey, maybe this guy could actually make another run for president here. And, you know, them chanting 4 more years and all that shit, that's fine. I think if things had gone terribly last night, they would have had their excuse to swap him out for someone. And I actually think strategically, it's not the worst thing in the world that it didn't go horrifically. I mean, yeah, he was slurring his words and mumbling and lost his place and coughing. And he pronounced Lakin Riley Lincoln Riley. That was a lovely moment for her family, I'm sure. After being goaded into it by Marjorie Taylor Greene, who showed up dressed like she was operating one of those things that you hit with the bell at the carnival. You know, she showed up with a bow tie and a top hat on, like my cousin Vinny in the courtroom scene when she loses his tux. This thing I found at the thrift store was this was the only suit I could find. What does he say? But she goads him into it, and he's like, the Lincoln Riley. Just not a great moment for him. But just in terms of energy and bluster, I got to hand it to him. I thought he did good, you know? I think strategically that'll be good for the Republicans, because if he had come out and had an obvious fuck-up or needed to take a break or really had trouble piecing together his words or words in general, I mean, if you actually listen to the words he used, you know, speech doesn't make any sense. I mean, I think it's terrible for our country what he's doing. But if he had come out and actually not been able to find the words, then the left would be in panic mode today. I think the left is going to be emboldened today, you know, this weekend, in thinking, all right, he's got a little gusto left. And he did what a lot of strategists on the left were saying that he should do, which is kind of lean into the age thing. He came out and he opened up with a joke. If I were smart, I'd leave now. I like that. You know, he's acknowledging the fact that there's a good chance he's probably going to fuck it up. So everybody's clapping. Maybe I should leave. I like that. You know, that wins points with me. I mean, we'll never vote for him. I think he's grossly incompetent. But as far as the speech itself goes, I thought that was good. So now maybe the left will think, all right, he's got a fighting chance. If we can roll him out to two debates like this, he can hang with Trump. And I don't think that's the worst thing in the world, because I think the Democrats' best chance to win, if I was a Democratic strategist and I wanted to win in 2024, my plan would be getting Biden out of there. It would have happened a long time ago. And I would have swapped in probably Michelle Obama. I think she is probably the most electable candidate out of the entire Democratic field. She plays to Obama's popularity. She's a woman. She's black. I think she's reasonable. I think she would appeal to centrists. And I think that if the Democrats rolled out somebody closer to the center, I don't think Gavin Newsom would have as good of a chance, because California is burning in the background. And he's a straight white guy, which apparently is bad now. So sorry for existing. But I think Michelle Obama would have had the best chance. And to see her come out and say that she's not running last week, I thought, okay, that's good for the right. I think that the strategists that would have been in my camp and saying they got to replace Biden now are probably thinking, maybe he's not that bad. But he is bad. He will fuck things up out in public between now and the election again. He will go back to his normal, non-medicated self. He will, you know, lose track of what day it is, forget the names of world leaders. He will trip and fall at some point again. I mean, it's sad. I'm not rooting for old people to trip and fall. Generally, this is the reality of the situation. The guy trips and falls. So he will beef some shit. And now, after chanting four more years and that speech, I think that they are set. I think it's Trump versus Biden. And I think, to be honest with you, that's a great thing for the right. I think that the polls right now show Trump in the lead. I think Biden will continue to fuck things up and lose popularity until the election. And I think the election could happen at a fever pitch point where Trump is leading Biden in many of the polls and could eventually carry most of the swing states if things stay the path they are. So for me, as somebody that wants any Republican candidate to win over Biden, my biggest concern would have been them swapping somebody out for him, and I don't think they're going to do it now after that speech. I think they are emboldened. And to be honest with you, if I'm a Democrat, I mean, I know most of them are woke and, you know, some of them are afraid of their own shadows. But if I'm a Democrat, you know, having him come out and make these partisan statements isn't the worst thing in the world. People were saying, oh, you know, it's a campaign stop for him. Hey, you know, you want your guy to go out and fight for what he believes in, I guess. You know, that's what's made Trump so popular. Love him or hate him. They have thrown everything in this fucking guy's way. And he is like Juggernaut from X-Men just running through brick walls. You know? And it's like no matter how... everybody laughed in 2016 when he was like, I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any votes. Well, now we know what he meant. You know? That... the fucking, like, hard-headed, I'm the man mentality. It does have its drawbacks, as anybody on the left will tell you, I'm sure. But there are certain situations where it's a benefit. Like, people that are just exasperated watching everything they've thrown at this guy. 94 indictments, you know? All this shit is, like, backfiring. The Russia hoax. It's all backfiring. It's funny to watch them now still allude. Like, you got guys like Adam Schiff. I mean, who just, you know, he's just never going to get it. He's not only never going to get it, he's not going to understand what a fool he's making out of himself. Not just to most people with common sense, but to people in his party. By continuing to stand by things like the Russian collusion hoax. And you got the usual suspects, you know, the Hillarys and the Maddows out there still talking about Russia. You know, they're just not going to get, they just don't have, you know what they don't have? They don't have the finesse, the left. They've got their talking points and they've got their fake news and they've got their 101 reasons to hate Donald Trump that they've manufactured from ChatGPT or somewhere. But they don't have any finesse in applying those things, you know? Finesse would be like, hey, like, let's indict him on one charge on the most egregious thing. Finesse is not, let's throw 94 charges at him so it just looks like we're trying to do everything we can. You know? Finesse would be, hey, let's close some of the border and take action and, you know, let the Republicans do what they want to do with the border right now. Let's give them everything they want because the 10 or 15 million illegal immigrants that we're trying to let into the country for whatever purpose, some people say the purposes of voting, which we'll talk about. We've already got in who we need. Oh, and by the way, it's probably a national security threat in a way that we won't find out about until something bad happens, unfortunately. Finesse would be, okay, let the Republicans do what they want now. You know, you have to take ground, but you also have to give a little bit up as you go. You know, and you just move the line, like Jordan Peterson will say. You move the line a millimeter at a time. You don't go backwards, but you take tiny, tiny, tiny small steps. You don't come out and throw the goddamn kitchen sink. 'Cause now it's obvious to people. You know, now it's obvious to people that, like, hey, you know, this really is, there's a lot of dirty tricks involved here. And I wonder what will happen leading up to the next election. You got, I don't know, what is it, March? So you got 8 months, a little less than 8 months until election day. So what happens over the next 6 months? How many more people are let into the country? Do we have another national emergency? That would work to the benefit of the incumbent, I think. I just don't know. I don't know what the plan is down there in the bilge pump of the Democratic Party. I think replacing Biden is out. Did they try? I saw Merrick Garland's speech last week. Who just said, we've just got to get rid of voter ID laws. That's concerning, don't you think? I mean, I don't really understand this one. You need an ID to fly. You need an ID to rent a car. You need an ID to purchase alcohol. You need an ID to rent most places. You need an ID to drive a vehicle. You need an ID to go to an axe throwing place. You need an ID to open a Coinbase wallet. You need an ID to open a bank account. You need an ID to do pretty much everything except the one thing that rests at the heart of the democracy in our country, which is vote. Why would you not require an identification? Is that... I just don't get it. What reason... I mean, other than racism, right? It's racist. How is it racist? It's just ridiculous. You know? I don't know. I've seen a lot of black people, Asian people, Latino people on the right say it's not racist. It just creates a set of rules. I mean, in a country that's obsessed with whether or not there's election fraud being committed, wouldn't a great thing to do be to say, hey, everybody just needs their ID? One person, one vote. What's wrong with that? What is wrong with that? Unless that would inhibit some plans somewhere. I don't know. Would it? And, you know, I was reading Mick West's book, Tales from the Rabbit Hole, wherein he gives a semi-reasonable explanation for the jacking up of the votes at 3 a.m. on election night in all the swing states. There's one thing I guarantee you won't happen again. Because whether that was legitimate or not, shouldn't have happened. Shouldn't have went down like that. Doesn't look right. Feels funny. Doesn't pass the smell test. Speaking of Joe Biden. Doesn't pass the smell test when I'm watching the election results and things look like they're all one way. And then four swing states all jack themselves up in one direction for Joe Biden. And he gets 130,000 votes to Donald Trump's 12. What's going on? Even in very liberal cities, there's... I can count... I live in downtown Philadelphia. I can count more than 12 people that I know are voting for Donald Trump that live here. So whatever happens, that shit better not happen again. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to do anything, but I'm just saying... You have a lot of people out there that would not be happy with that. And so I'm hoping that the integrity of the election is scrutinized enough after all of the claims from last year that it's not an issue this year. I really do. I think it would work to our benefit for everybody to think that there's some integrity behind the election process. Having said that, when you see a record number of people pouring through the border, and you look at the chart, I mean, over the last 10 years, the numbers aren't even close. You know, and then for him to sit up there last night and say, hey, I've got a plan for the border. And the Republicans won't sign it. It's like, yeah, you know, too little, too late. You want to put a plan in place now? Look at the last decade. The numbers under Biden are insane. What is the mindset? Between what is the mindset of somebody, what is the mindset of a federal government fighting against the state of Texas that's trying to protect its border? What is the mindset? What's the argument for telling Texas that they can't put up razor wire to protect their own border? That's insane. You know, somebody that I know that leans left said, well, people are killing themselves crawling through the razor wire. Well, you know, whose fault is that? I'm not trying to be a dick. I know it's a humanitarian crisis, but there has to be some semblance of order. You know, if I crawl through razor wire and hurt myself, that's my fault. That's not Greg Abbott's fault for putting the razor wire there. He's not throwing razor wire at people that are just standing idly. He's just putting it at the border of the country to protect his state. And taxpayers are paying the salaries and for the government resources that are going into a legal battle to prevent him from doing that. What is the mindset behind that? That's about as counterintuitive as you can think of. And then this guy rolls out at the State of the Union's like, well, I got a thing here. And he starts taunting the Republicans. Ah, you don't want to sign it, huh? You know, it's like you've already let 15 million people in. How about when we sign border security, we actually lock the border down instead of this half-ass bill that allows thousands of people to still come through illegally? Does the word illegal mean anything anymore? How's that for a question? You can't call felons felons anymore. You can't call felonies felonies anymore. As best as I can tell, people are pretty much allowed to commit crimes in any major U.S. cities now, as long as it's not exceeding $900, which is why when law-abiding citizens like myself go to buy toothpaste, I have to hit a button, at which point a four-alarm fire goes off, and I got Target employees with keys and locks and biometric safes to open up the counter so I can get my tube of Crest. Because criminals, I'm sure I'll be placed on a re-education list for using that term, because criminals have found out if they stole Louis Vuitton purses valued at $999 or $899, one purse at a time, they'll get a disorderly conduct instead of a larceny felony. Everything makes sense over here, right? So I don't really understand. You can't make the border issue make sense to me. I am for legal immigration. For it. Love it. I'm here because of legal immigration. Like Tom Homan said, you want to come here legally, you go through the port of entry. Tom Homan's right. We need to get Tom Homan in charge of something at the border again. He's a fucking good old boy, huh? Tom Homan. But he's right. You want to come to the country? You come through legally. You go through the port of entry. Listen, there was a point where I wanted to establish temporary residence in Canada a while back. Their immigration process is insane. It is insane. I was considering doing some schooling there. And never wound up happening, but their immigration process, I remember, and it was Quebec too, which is a little crazier than most of Canada, but their immigration process is nuts. It's nuts. Just to apply, I had to fill out like aptitude tests. I remember I had to send in bank statements. I had to like, it was so comprehensive. And I'm not a criminal, you know? I was like a young, strapping lad with a college education already and, you know, a little bit of money in the bank and a clean record. And even then, it was extremely burdensome. So why can't we have a system like that? Why can't we have a system based on merits? And I don't forget what Canada uses. It's like priority points or something. But I remember you got to fill out this thing and you get a score and, you know, and then on top of it, they want you to speak French. If you're thinking about trying to get a visa to go to Quebec, you got to speak French on top of it. Could you imagine if the U.S. did that? An English aptitude test? Oh my God. The fucking left would have a meltdown. They would have a meltdown. But it's just common sense. What's our policy? Our policy is literally come in no matter who you are for whatever reason. That's it. That's our policy. Our policy is come across. It doesn't matter where you're from or what your name is or what your intentions are. If we don't let you across the border, That makes us racists and terrible people. That's our policy as best as I can see it now. And it's not going to work to our benefit, folks. You know, you can put the argument of those people being a burden on the taxpayer aside. I mean, I almost don't even care about that because the financial issue is just completely out of this. I mean, this guy's talking about last night saving $500 billion over 10 years by having a 25% billionaire tax. And by the way, I'm for the 25% billionaire tax. Go ahead. But what do you think $500 billion over 10 years is going to do? That's $50 billion each year, right? And right now we're running $2 trillion deficits. We've given more than $50 billion to Ukraine this year. So what, like, what is 500? You're going to, you know, that's what you're fighting for. You're fighting for a $500 billion credit over 10 years. What is the point of that? It just seems like arbitrary and capricious and meaningless when you're running $2 trillion deficits. It's like going after Uber drivers, you know, who have, you know, maybe you get $600, maybe you get $1,000, maybe an Uber driver gets $10,000 on Venmo, all right? At 30%, that's $3,000 in taxes. All right, you know, it's nice to collect that. I'm all for paying my taxes, but we have to think of the large numbers necessary to solve the problems here that we're having fiscally. And you're just not going to be able to do it without severely cutting spending. I mean, $500 billion over 10 years, it's nice, we'll take it, but it's a drop in the bucket. It doesn't do anything for us. You know, modern problems require modern solutions. And our modern problem is... our modern problem is we can't stop spending. And we're running massive deficits, and the national debt is accelerating. And at some point, I hope this doesn't happen, but at some point, the bond market is likely going to have a fucking, as they say in Mexico, poquito problema. See? I'm all for being multilingual. I just don't, it doesn't make sense to me. The math doesn't make sense to me. And you know what? The Republicans aren't any better when it comes to fiscal shit. Because Trump's talking about, hey, you know, what I would do is lower rates. You know, he was saying, I want negative rates while I was in there. And that wouldn't have been any help either. It just would have blown the bubble even bigger. We would have had more inflation if that happened. And lowering rates now, even though that's what they're going to do, I mean, it's just going to create more inflation. It's not going to stop the pipe bomb that is already in the economy, in the plumbing of the economy right now, thanks to these 5% rates. We saw New York Community Bank go under, saved by good old Steve Mnuchin came back out of the woodwork. He called the banks. That guy, Steve Mnuchin, December 2018, I'm going to call the banks. JP Morgan says everything's fine, so let's just go ahead and stop the stock sell-off. Okay. Saves New York Community Bank. My question is, who's going to save the next 5 regional banks that go under? You think these people are the only people carrying bad paper? Did anybody notice last week when I think the Treasury and the Fed, Powell in front of Congress, both said, hey, commercial real estate's going to be a problem? Powell said that in such a way while talking to Congress that it almost seemed preordained that they have their BTFP facility ready to handle that as well. He said it with a confidence as if the Fed already has their rescue plan in place for commercial real estate, and they're going to need something. So the banks will continue to self-immolate, as will other businesses, as a result of rates being this high. You know, we're now about 2 years after the rate hike started, and so this is generally when you see these things start to hit the economy. Credit card debt is at all-time highs. Personal savings is at all-time lows. Things are fine. And we're talking about $500 billion over 10 years. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Gold, and both Bitcoin and gold, but let's talk about gold. Gold is noticing that there's a huge problem here because gold is like damn near $2,200 right now. Been doing a lot of talking about Bitcoin lately, but I do want to talk about gold. I mean, because for me, gold is a number one. It is the bedrock that everything else sits on. Even Bitcoin, folks. Sorry. I like Bitcoin. But if I had to choose between gold or Bitcoin, I would take gold. Gold is near all-time highs right now, but the miners can't catch a bid for the life of them. And if you'd like to hear 19 hours on this topic, you can go listen to the last 19 Peter Schiff podcast, but I will mention it briefly. You know, the price of gold is telling us something. It's talking to us about the risks that we have heading into the back end of this year. The geopolitical risks, okay? You have the bifurcation of the global economy into the BRICS in the West. You have the war in the Middle East. You have the war in Ukraine. There's a lot of risk out there, and gold is still top dog, and central banks continue to buy it. And so gold has now broken through all-time highs. So has the GLD. If you look at a chart of the GLD, it looks like a confirmed breakout. Not one for technical analysis, but certain patterns say certain things. Looks like we are in the midst of a breakout out of a cup and handle. Never thought I would say that. Just kill me now. But gold is telling us that, you know, look, the market's not sure that the inflation problem. Imagine the fact that gold is at all-time highs with rates at 5%. You know, 5% rates, ostensibly 2% real rates, right? Now, that's supposed to be restrictive to gold, but we know that gold separated. If you look at spot gold versus real rates, spot gold separated from real rates many months ago, if not maybe a year or two ago. And what that says is there's a change in sentiment, there's a loss of confidence, and the normal rules don't apply with the situation that we're in now. And that situation is pretty much unprecedented territory when it comes to fiscal and monetary policy. And so gold has got to all-time highs. Miners still like 60% off their highs. And I wrote about this last week. If you don't read my blog, it's called Fringe Finance. The link is in the podcast description. It's free to sign up. Unless you want the good shit, then you got to pay. Sorry, suckers. But what was I saying? I feel like Joe Biden. I can't remember what the point I was going to try to make. Oh, yeah. Miners, I think, are still the single most undervalued sector of the market right now. I love miners. Gold and silver miners, the SIL, the GDX are my two favorite ways to play it. I own Newmont, I own Pan American, a couple names like that, some Barrick Gold. But if you look at how the miners have tracked compared to gold, it's not even close. They seem to be extremely undervalued. They are generating cash with gold spot where it is. And part of this comes from the future expectations for gold. My friend Larry Lepard was telling me that, you know, models in the future still think that the price of gold will be $1,800, $1,700 in 2025, 2026. If that doesn't happen, all those models are going to have to readjust. And all of a sudden, miners are going to get some love that they haven't gotten from quantitative analysts, but people just looking for value. I mean, the market is so overvalued right now. I think the PE on the NASDAQ right now is like 37 times earnings. You know, you got Microsoft 35, 36 times earnings. You got Nvidia, that's forget about it. The aggressive multiples in the market right now, at some point, they're going to get roped in, and it shouldn't be too much longer. You can only gamma squeeze things for so long because that requires excess liquidity to pull off, and liquidity is getting zapped here as rates stay at 5%, and we still haven't seen the Fed's reverse repo facility drained. We still haven't seen the BTFP end, even though I think that's in a couple of days. So there's going to be multiple catalysts that zap liquidity. When that happens, the discretionary money that people throw at gamma squeezes, which are really like being high and then doing crack on top of that. That's what a gamma squeeze is like. I mean, it's overclocking an already euphoric market, to go back to our previous analog. Those types of moves will beget swift moves lower when this thing starts to unravel. And a deleveraging starts to happen. Stock prices fall, people get margin calls, they got to sell everything that's not bolted down, et cetera, et cetera. At some point, that's going to happen. Keep rates where they are. I heard, of all people, Neel Kashkari this past week say, well, you know, why are we in such a rush to cut? It's like, you're the guy that said there's infinity money on 60 Minutes, right? That's you? Same guy. Yeah, I recognize you. Good haircut. I rock the same one. It was not a diss. That was probably the only thing I would stand in solitude with Neil Kashkari about, the fact that we're both bald. But even he says, well, you know, we shouldn't be in that big of a rush to cut. All right, keep rates where they are and see what happens to liquidity. And then when liquidity dries up and people start having to sell things and, you know, the discretionary income now has come down as rates have been ratcheted higher, people's mortgages have gotten more expensive, their credit cards have gotten more expensive, their lines of credit are getting tapped out, and the cash that they had left over from COVID is now no longer in the bank. When all that shit happens, then it becomes a race to sell everything. Financial assets, houses, kidneys, anything you can get your hand on to sell and get liquidity from will happen. At that point, people are going to start to ask themselves, where is the value in the market? And that's when I think people are going to look at miners. Will it help if we're still having a geopolitical crisis across the world? Yes, that's not exactly a headwind. Will it help if the dollar continues to unravel the way that it has over the last couple of weeks? Yes, that's not exactly a headwind either. But that will help out miners. You could already argue miners are, you know, 20, 30%, 40% undervalued based on where the price of spot gold and silver are right now. So for me, if I had to kind of invest in one sector for the rest of the year, that would be it. The GDX is on my list of 24 stocks that I'm watching for the year. It remains my number one pick. I would still be buying it here. I am still buying it here. I am still long the GDX, rather, not the GLD. And I like miners here. The other 23 picks, you can catch them on my blog. I was actually just running the numbers on those. People that subscribe to my blog see that I keep track of my portfolio updates, how my 24 picks for the year are doing versus the S&P for the year. Basically, today was the first day I plugged them in and they're beating the S&P, which is pretty good because I think the S&P is up like 8% for the year. So those picks are they're in the green finally. It only took till March 8th. We'll see. I'm sure it'll become a horrific travesty for me by the end of the year. I'm sure they'll be down 50% by the end of the year, but let's enjoy this small victory while we can. In the words of Joe Biden, if I were smart, I'd leave now. Look, let's move on to Bitcoin. And I only have one thing I want to say about Bitcoin. You can read my blog. My Bitcoin pieces are free. To hear everything I got to say, go watch my interview with Peter McCormack if you want to hear me talk about Bitcoin for 2 hours mindlessly. The one thing I could say is I blocked a couple more Bitcoin people yesterday on Twitter because I can't with them. You know, I'm long Bitcoin, I'm pro Bitcoin now, and I still, turns out it had nothing to do with the fact that it was Bitcoin for me not to be able to stand the people that advocate for it. The people that fucking tweet nonstop about Bitcoin 24/7 are just, and it's the tone of their tweets, which is basically, if you don't act right now and buy some, you're a fucking moron and you're missing out, you know? And will that prove to be the case in the future? Maybe. But do I want to hear that shit from anybody? And the answer is no. And again, I'm long, okay? I'm long. So these are essentially people out there touting a position that I'm long, and it's still, I can't listen to it. That's just not the way I do business. I don't goad people into positions. So I wrote this piece last week called Let Bitcoin Cook, which means, hey, it's going up. Adoption is going up. The hash rate is going up. The nodes are going up. Wall Street is adopting it. Let the fucking thing go. You're going to catch more flies with honey than you are with vinegar. Okay? If the son of the crown prince of the United Arab Emirates decides tomorrow he's going to put $10 billion in Bitcoin on the sovereign balance sheet, it's not going to be because some fucking dork on Twitter is tweeting every 30 minutes, you're missing out, you're missing out, you're missing out. I saw one yesterday. I blocked this guy. I had to, you know, because I followed a bunch of these people once I started to understand Bitcoin a little bit better. And I was like, all right, you know, I'm part of the community now. Let me follow some of these people. One of the guys I followed yesterday, he wrote, what the hell did he write? Oh, he wrote, what are you going to do when Bitcoin goes to 250,000? It's just like, one, karmically, you're asking for it, okay? That's known in my circle as a jinx. Or counting your chickens before they're hatched. It's just something I don't play in, whether it comes to finance or whether it comes to the Phillies being up 10-0 in the ninth. Because we've all seen it go the wrong way unexpectedly. And that's that. And if you need a reminder of that, here's a short-term reminder. You know, both times Bitcoin tapped its all-time high last week, it promptly got massacred. Yeah. Okay, ETF future funds liquidating and Coinbase going down, blah, 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 blah. All right, I know you got a reason and I know you got an excuse. But that's what happens. As soon as you say, hey, we're there, we're at all-time highs, clang, you're down $10,000 of Bitcoin in 2 seconds. So everybody that bought that all-time high is instantly getting their ass kicked. Now, sophisticated investors, people that have been in the market for a while, people that know Bitcoin, they know, hey, this is part and parcel with the land. You're prepared for volatility. You invest on a recurring basis. Maybe you use Swan, which is an app that just invests for you, and then you don't have to worry about it. It just, you know, you don't even have to look at the price. You just know, hey, I'm going to invest $20 a day, right? And quick plug again, Swan, that link is in my podcast description. I don't care. I'm fucking shameless. You get $10 free Bitcoin if you use my link. Woo! But real people that have done their due diligence know that there's swings like that, and so they don't celebrate every fucking $1,000 up or every time it taps a new all-time high. Look, if you're going to be right, you're going to be right. You're going to have the scoreboard to prove it 10 years from now. To me, it's just intellectual masturbation and useless, and I think it does more harm than good to sit out there and put out price targets like that, even if it does go there, even if it goes to 250, if it goes to a million. Nobody would be happier if it went to a million than me, you know? But I'm not out there touting it because it might go there, but it might not. And I think if you want to attract people to Bitcoin for the right reasons, which is understanding how the network works and how it has the potential to kind of become a standard, empower people, shift the balance of power financially, and kind of usurp the fiat system a little bit and work, in my opinion, alongside gold. A lot of people will say, oh, gold is useless, right? Another stupid statement, I think, but everybody's got their opinion. If you want people that will educate themselves about it and learn to like it for the right reasons, those are not going to be the people that you attract with the appeal of getting rich immediately. Or, you know, you're going to buy it at 70 and tomorrow it's going to go to 250. And what are you going to do? How many Lambos are you going to buy? I think, look, there's a reasoned case here for using it to preserve some wealth. Put some money into a new asset class that is experiencing some adoption, whose future is uncertain but is less uncertain than it was 13 years ago, that has been adopted by an increasing number of corporations and individuals, that is accompanied by a robust network that is secure, that grows in how it is secure, and uses a ledger that's immutable. It's a new type of currency. It's a digital currency that has the potential to usurp all of the currencies currently in use worldwide. It's a delicate dance that has to be done for it to weave its way into the threading of the global economy, but it's doing it quite well. Now that you have Wall Street doing Bitcoin's bidding, I think that's a huge positive. But it's still speculative. And what is the price? My question with Peter McCormack, can you explain it in a sentence? And he couldn't. Well, what is it? It's the exchange rate, I think, is the best way for me to describe it. You're buying, you know, $70,000 is the exchange rate between one Bitcoin to one US dollar or wherever it's at today. That would be, to me, I think, the best way to think of it. You own a digital asset that is in the process of becoming a globally adopted and accepted digital currency, the first of its kind, backed by a first of its kind network with more computing power than any other network on the face of the earth, that is still somewhat speculative and somewhat of a risk asset at this point. And the price you pay is the exchange rate to benefit from the things that you get from Bitcoin, which would be the potential for it being a store of value, the mobility of using it, the ease of using it, and the advantages that I've talked about before that it has that gold does not have. And so I wrote about this in my last portfolio update. Go to my blog, Fringe Finance. That link is in the podcast description if you want to check out what else more I have to say about that. But if I had to describe it, say, hey, it's just the exchange rate. It's the exchange rate between one currency for the other. To me, so far, that's the simplest way to describe the price, which I think a lot of people have had trouble doing, to be honest with you. They talked to Larry Lepard, talked to Peter McCormack. Nobody can really sum it up real well. Somebody wrote that on Twitter for me, and I think that makes sense. You know, I talked to one other person this past week who tells me they don't think Bitcoin's going to make it. I said, okay, fine. You know, and then I tried to let them give their argument, and it just became clear that they didn't understand how the network worked. They don't understand. I mean, it seems to me there is a fairly amount of sophisticated people in the world of finance that don't understand it. I used to think that was a scapegoat for bulls. Oh, you just don't get it. Oh, yeah, stupid me, I don't get it. But now I really do think a lot of people don't get it. You know, can't they just shut it down? You don't get it if you ask a question like that. Can't they just print more than 21 million coins? You don't get it if you ask that question. You have to do a little bit more research and understanding as to how the network works. So look a little bit deeper would be my challenge to you if those are like your two main concerns. And check out my article. It was called Let Bitcoin Cook. And thank you to my friends over at Bitcoin Magazine who syndicated that. I appreciate that shit. Speaking of Bitcoin, I saw that Kathy Wood did a podcast with Andre Iguodala the other day. I don't really know what that means, you know? I know that Andre Iguodala has not done an intensive amount of due diligence on the amount of capital that this woman has destroyed over the last few years. But, yeah, I don't know. I just put that in my notes, things to talk about, and I guess I don't really have anything to say about it. You know, I think she's a terrible investment manager, and I think he does not probably understand the world of technology investments in a way necessary to give, to lend his, maybe he thinks she's a genius. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Iguodala is a CFA, and I'm the idiot. And he shares her vision for innovation, which is a complex vision that I do not have the ability to grasp because of my pea-sized brain. So rather than talk shit, let me congratulate Andre Iguodala on his podcast with Kathy Wood. Good job to all involved over there, and I wish you both continued success. One other thing I've been writing about is this Apple Vision Pro. I have read nothing but experiences of people returning this thing because it weighs too much and it's hurting their head. Can I just say something? There's a number of black swans, I think, that could happen for the market that could catalyze that pullback in valuations that I was talking about earlier. But one of them would be a name like Apple, which is tucked into every single portfolio on Earth and the Swiss National Bank and is in every ETF on Earth. Could you imagine a company like that experiencing a slowdown? And tell you what, I'm not so sure the Vision Pro is this resounding success. I'm not sure it's going to meet estimates. We'll have to see, but surely a huge drawdown in Apple. And by the way, this isn't the 8x PE Apple that it was in 2005 that Carl Icahn just took a stake in. Okay, this is a 27x earnings now, fully flushed out valued company that now has a little bit of debt. Sure, it has a lot of cash on its balance sheet. Great company, hugely cash generative, great products. But hey, innovation is going to be next, right, Kathy Wood? It's all about innovation. So maybe Tim Cook could meet with Andre Iguodala and have a session about what's next. The watch was cool. I like it. Like the watch. The other products are cool. I like the Macs. I like the iPhones. But the Vision Pro, I'm not sure it's going to break new ground. And they just canceled the electric car project. And they're not doing a TV. So somebody over there better start putting on their fucking thinking cap, because it's starting to feel like this could be about the time that Tim Cook says, well, I'm out of here. I mean, Johnny Ive, he left, right? Tim Cook could be on his way out, and that would be kind of like the last of the old guard. You know? They've held on to whatever Steve Jobs they had. Didn't Steve Jobs say at one point, if we introduce a pencil or a stylus, that, you know, you can just count us out? And they introduced a stylus for the iPad. Didn't he say something like that? It's like 311. You know, their old lyrics, they used to say, the day we turn to pop, the show will stop. Well, what did they do? Then they wrote a bunch of pop songs. Nick Hexum, he can't help himself. This is another rant for another day. And they stole a song, too, which pissed me off. They borrowed, I don't know, some EDM track for that song, Crossfire. And shit just hasn't been right with me in 311 since then. I invited Peanut on the podcast a while back. He declined to come on. But yeah, Apple, you know, the day we turn to pop, the show will stop. If you see us using a stylist, everything's fucked. Paraphrase, Steve Jobs. So what's next? Where's the innovation going to come from? You need somebody over there to start taking mushrooms and LSD again the way that Steve Jobs was. I don't recommend abandoning your wife like he did. But if you can take the good parts of being a visionary and leave behind the bad parts of being a deadbeat father, we would appreciate it. I don't know, man. Shit just feels different at Apple. Feels different, you know? It'd be weird to see Microsoft take over the innovation helm, wouldn't it? They never really innovated anyways. They just got their shit to market faster than Apple. You know, Apple stole the Mac OS from Park, Xerox, right? They stole the mouse from Xerox. And they started to put together the Mac OS. And they showed Bill Gates one of the prototypes of the Mac OS. And they put out Windows 95 before the Mac OS could come out, and they won the race. So they put forth a shittier product faster. And next thing you know, Bill Gates is lecturing the world on vaccines. I don't know what happened. Some other things in there in the middle. But wouldn't it be funny if Microsoft turned into the innovation company again? You know, the thing is, you got to make a fucking product that doesn't suck, Microsoft. Just a heads up. The Xbox is okay. You know? You got to make a product that doesn't fucking blow. Which is the tough part. It's like Comcast. Is there a reason I cannot pull the guide up on my television without that thing still being choppy and slow? Can somebody just open up the plumbing to the research and development faucet for one quarter and just funnel a couple billion dollars into a way to make your cable box not slow? Is there a reason I can get on my phone, my watch, my computer, I can use the digital display on my coffee machine, and things move quickly? You know, when I swipe right, the screen moves. Bang! It's there. But I click the up arrow on my cable box guide, and it's like... It's like using a Commodore 64. And they're wondering why people are abandoning cable. You know, even in the Netflix menus, see how they navigate? You ever use an Apple TV, the menus? It's smooth. It's like butter. You press right, hey, moves over to the right. Nice and smooth. Next menu, next menu, next menu. Nice transitions. Nice fade. You got a little processing power in those Apple TVs. Try to use your Xfinity box to move from one channel to the next, and it starts smoking, you know? It's like a kerosene engine powering those things. What do we got on this thing, a Cuisinart? Can somebody just fix that, please? I've really lost the thread here. Point is, something's going to break, and I need to use 2 minutes to petition Joe Rogan to have Jeremy Riss on his podcast to debunk Bob Lazar. Can we please do that? How many more David Grushes and Jeremy Corbells am I going to have to listen to before at least get Mick West back on? You've had him on before. somebody to debunk the alien thing. It's out of control. You can go back 3 or 4 podcasts. I did a whole rant on this if this is something that floats your boat. But can you please have Jeremy Riss on? He's got the whole Lazar thing debunked. All right? Joe, can you hear me? I know you don't listen. I know you don't listen to my podcast, Joe. Why would you? But I listen to yours. And I would like to hear Jeremy Riss because I'm tired of, you know, there was a Pentagon report out today. And I know you can't trust anything the government says, etc. But it just said, hey, we've combed our files and there's no evidence of anything. Arrow put it out, the AARO, which is the advanced something RO for UFO thing. There's a million of them. There's ASAP, there's Arrow. Typical government, 5,000 different committees, all to figure out that there's no there. Maybe we can start a task force. It's another thing Biden did last week. I'm going to start a task force. Great. That makes me feel a lot better. Don't worry, guys. We've got a task force on it. Well, what's a task force? It's three of the same idiots that were trying to figure it out before. There was one press conference a couple years ago where they had a podium outside the White House. It was COVID, I think. And they had a little 8.5 by 11 that somebody printed out on an HP inkjet. And it just said COVID task force on it. Same morons in Congress. Just all part of a task force now. Remember in Burn After Reading? He's like, you're in league with that woman. You're part of a league of morons. That's what a task force is. It's a league of morons. We have all these organizations all coming together to what? Come up with the tough to find truth that there's nothing really going on at the Skinwalker Ranch. That people that have a vested monetary interest in there being aliens continue to claim that there's aliens and nobody else has any real evidence. Meanwhile, everybody's walking around with their camera in their pocket nowadays. This isn't exactly the camcorder on the shoulder days anymore, where you get the one, you know, grainy photo of Bigfoot. Everybody's walk. Just go on Twitter. Every time somebody fucking does something stupid, there's a video of it. You can't find me one alien. Can't find me one real UFO. Not buying it. Joe Rogan, have Jeremy Riss on your goddamn podcast, please. He's been on Brett Weinstein already, and Brett's your friend, so that's like 2 degrees of separation. And he was on Danny Jones, which, by the way, if you don't listen to the Danny Jones podcast, you should. It's the best fucking brand new podcast that I found over the last year. I really like Danny Jones. He's got a lot of interest. If you like Joe Rogan, you will like the Danny Jones podcast. It used to be called Concrete. And I have officially run out of things to say because I'm shilling for other people, and I got a whole list of things here I didn't talk about. But I kind of want a cup of coffee now, and that's what I'm going to go do. So, thanks for listening, fools. And I'll be back hopefully with my guests who have canceled over the last 2 weeks. Remember the Merv Griffin episode in Seinfeld? Where they're sitting there just bullshitting, and Kramer's like, this show has hit a new low, and they turn the lights off. That's where I'm at now. So I'm just going to back away quietly into the bushes and hope that you all enjoy the rest of your weekend. All right, fools? I'm out. Peace.